Wallace and I have been talking the last 2 days. Of course, everybody has kind of heard the announcement of McCook businessman John Kugler passing away the other day on Sunday at the age of 68. And I hooked up with Wallace, and I tell you, Wallace, you've got some stories because you guys, you and your brother, Eddie, as teenagers, got associated with John, and you've got some fantastic stories about how you guys have become friends and worked with each other and what you do your companies over the years, haven't you?
We have, Rich. The first part of this saga is going to be plural. It's going to be Eddie and Wallace, the Marsh twins. If you don't know us, Eddie, I'm an identical twin, my brother and I, Eddie and Wallace. We first met John the Saturday after McCook football ended in 1984. I can remember my dad came into the house basically running, and he said, "Get to Kugler's West Beat, quick. The boss's son is working on a Saturday morning." And Eddie and I had jobs throwing papers for most of our life, Omaha World Herald and all that, but we were at the time unemployed because football had just ended. And so we went to Kugler's West Beat, and John was sitting there, you know, behind the counter working. And Eddie and I interviewed with him, told him we wanted jobs, and we didn't know what to expect, but John, he was asking us, okay, so what previous experience do you have? Have you ever worked before? What are your favorite classes at school? Actually talked about teachers, and then asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we had a plan. We told him we wanted to go to the University of Oklahoma, get degrees in petroleum engineering, and start our own oil company. And what was interesting is my dad, we were there so long that my dad, he was driving by, parked across the street at the spirit shop, and was just trying to make sure everything was okay. And when the conversation ended, John said, "We'll only need one of you, but how can I pass on both of you?" And so John Kugler hired the Marsh boys, Eddie and Wallace Marsh, in 1984, October of 84, and one of us would work nights on Friday, and we split the shift. We were open from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, and one of us opened and one of us closed, and so we handled the Saturday shifts. And working with John Kugler was just amazing because at the time they were starting the K-Stores in Arapahoe and Cambridge, I think, and John was spending a lot of time at West B, and he asked Eddie and I if we'd go help, you know, set up some stuff. And I remember both of us, I think, were at those stores, and he came in on the Friday, and he said, "I noticed you guys didn't punch in when you were helping with the K-Stores on, like, Tuesday and Wednesday." And we said, "No, we said we could help." And he's like, "You're employees." He said, "You're on the clock. I need to pay you. I owe you money." And that was just, you know, that was just John. He would come in, and he treated Eddie and I like adults, which he was, you know, the first non-teacher, non-family friend that treated us like adults, and we had a lot of conversations with him. I remember he was talking to us, and Russ Kugler pulled up in his car. And John, Eddie and I were both there. We spent a lot of time there together, even though one of us was working. And John goes, "When the boss pulls up in his car, I'd recommend you run out there and fill it up." And so Eddie, we ran out. Almost tripped over each other trying to get to the nozzle first and fill up Russ Kugler's car. But, you know, John just, he had that way about him. He talked to us a lot. He got a job at the railroad. I think he went to the University of Denver, and it was when he was working for Denver. And he told us how a lot of the guys gave him a hard time because they accused him of getting the job because of who his father was. And he said he made the best of it. They were paying him $8 or $9 an hour. And he was like, you know, that's what a record album cost back in those days. You remember albums. And he was like, "Well, I'm making an album an hour." You know, but he really stressed upon Eddie and I, he was 27 at the time, about how he was trying to make a name for himself, make a hand at the family business, and wanted to be known for himself. There was an incident. There was a guy who worked for Roustabouts Incorporated. You know, John also, Eddie and I talked about the oil business. He did a really good job of introducing us to people in the oil companies. They all had charge accounts with Kugler, Stopworth Drilling, a blast from the past. Roustabouts Incorporated, that's when the Sleepy Hollow field was still making 2,000 or 3,000 barrels a day, and I think Marathon was a major operator out there. But there was this guy, Roustabouts Incorporated, he was trouble. He was, you know, Night Tracks at Indianola, if you remember that place. I think he was habitually barred from going there. And he would come in, and John, Chris Purvis, a guy named Mark, and Eddie and I were the employees, and John was really inventory was a problem because our inventory wasn't matching. And John was like, look, you guys have to match your inventory. You have to match your inventory. And there was this guy, he was a tough guy. Ralph Stutz Incorporated, he'd come in and he'd get cigarettes and candy and say, put down 2 or 3 quarts of motor oil. And one time he came in after John had given us that lecture, and I filled out exactly what he did, and I sort of was tricky with the ticket, so when he signed it, he didn't really see that I wrote what he actually bought. That was either on a Friday or Saturday, because the next Friday or Saturday he came back and he'd been fired. And he was looking to whip whoever got him fired, whip his butt. And I can remember I called Mark, I called Eddie, and I called John quick. And, I mean, the guy, he was threatening physical violence, took off his belt. Mark got there, and I think he hit him with his belt. And Eddie was across the street at the spirit shop. He went back home and had a baseball bat. And I remember John pulled up in his truck and just slammed on the brakes, car running, and John walked up to him. That was the first time, Rich, people don't remember, what you got to remember about John Cougar is just how big of a man he was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And John walks right up to the guy's chest, was to the guy's face, and John just looks down on him. And that was the first time I was like, man, John Cougar is a big man. And John, with John Cougar's ability, de-escalated that situation nonviolently. And I tell you what, that impressed upon Eddie and I that sometimes people have special gifts, sometimes people have special talents, sometimes people are really big men. John could have easily beat the guy to a pulp or done something stupid, but John just was a diplomat. And after the fact, he came in and talked to us about it and explained to us, you know, I'm glad you guys did that, sorry that had to happen, but as the boss, it was his job to take care of it. He appreciated that we called him, and he was always a boss. We called him boss till the day he died. He was always the boss. He always treated us like adults when we were in high school, and Eddie and I really appreciated that. I remember, and I wish I could take credit for this one, but this was all Eddie Marsh. John, it was sometime in February or March, I guess basketball games were over and people were coming through town, but Eddie was still open at 10:30 at night, and John came by the station. He goes, what are you doing still open? And he said, John, there's been so much business, I didn't want to close. The next week, John gave Eddie and I raises because, you know, Eddie had the sense that it was, even though it was 10 o'clock, there were still people filling up their cars with gas. They were obviously travelers. So he was a smart businessman, too. And you know, I think we went from 315 to 3 1/4. But at that age, I mean, that meant a lot to us. You know, the summer of 85 came, Eddie and I were going to go work in the oil fields, and John, he came in and he made a run to keep us. He offered us, to bump us up maybe from 325, like a 50-cent an hour raise. And, you know, but what he did, what was interesting, is he sat down and he did the math. Okay, what are y'all going to make in the oil fields down south? What can I afford to pay you? And he looked at the numbers and he's like, you know, if I was you, I would go too. So we left John under a great experience. We were flattered that he tried to keep us that summer. And then, you know, then life goes on. But what was interesting is every time Eddie and I'd go back, 95, 2000, 2005, we'd try to see John if we could. But what was amazing with John Cougar, Rich, was how he was an early adopter to the Internet. And he had a website, you know, flying high and all that stuff. And I was able to stalk him on the Internet. You know, Hooters, he would always post these pictures of him traveling and where he would go and restaurants, and he's on motorcycles and he's in balloons and he's in Albuquerque. And I was able to stay, I felt, even though I didn't see him all the time, I felt like I was connected to John because he was on the Internet. And the whole Steve Fawcett thing is underrated, in my opinion. What John Cougar and Steve Fawcett did, and I know that there was a lot of attention, but I cannot begin to tell you the pride it gave me seeing, you know, CBS News, ABC News, NBC News, Steve Fawcett in some exotic foreign island country filling up his balloon, maybe Australia or whatever, and there's John Cougar. And me just seeing John, just the pride it gave me to see John a part of the Steve Fawcett deal. And what's interesting is we were back in McCook in 2007, and went by John's house. I had my son, because my son was into Steve Fawcett at the time, and went to John's house, and we were talking to John, and out of the blue, Steve Fawcett's in the basement, and he comes upstairs. And anyway, we got a book. He had a book, and Steve signed it to my son, and I'm like, I don't want your signature. I want yours, John. And I sent you a copy of that. John Kugler actually signed the Steve Fawcett autobiography. He signed another page for my son, which was just extraordinary to me. I'm treasured that I have that book. But you know what's interesting, Rich, is that Eddie and I always felt like we owed John Kugler a debt that we had not satisfactorily paid back. And over time, we would talk to each other. He was on Instagram, and so we'd send each other Instagram reels. We would text, but he called me in 2017, needing a disposal well drilled at his fertilizer plant, and wanting to know if we had any. Insight, and we got to looking at it, and it was a pretty kind of a rare kind of well to drill, of a class 2 disposable, I think, and it was going to take a lot of work. We didn't really think we could do it. I had my vice president of engineering, Robert Eccles, said, it's tough to do, Wallace. He goes, but I think we can get it done. And I told John, I said, we would do it. We didn't charge him for our engineering hours. We wound up drilling the well at the fertilizer plant. Spent about a year doing it, and it was really just a thrill for me to be able to lend our assistance and to help John and the company, Kugler Oil Company, out fertilizer, because they had meant so much to Eddie and I. Russ Kugler was bigger than life. John was, I mean, he was John Kugler. I will tell you something, another interesting story, that, and these are the two memories that I think I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. Well, actually, one anyway. After my heart attack in 2022, John had his health problems, you know, for a long time, pretty well documented. And I called him, and we were talking about it, and I told him how it was my wife that saved my life. And John started talking about how Jennifer had saved his life. And he said, Wallace, he said, if it weren't for the women in our life, where would we be? And he truly loved his wife. He truly loved Jennifer. And, you know, it's just, I'm not going to think of John sad. Just so many happy memories. He meant so much to so many people. And that's the thing. It's not a contest. It's not a competition. Everybody has John Kugler memories. And there's so many people, I'm sure, whose lives he touched. He was just such a big man, and not only figuratively, but literally as well.
Great stories, Wallace, and there's a million more out there, I'm sure, from you and from others, that the memories, the years, John being here in the McCook area.
Oh, my first memory, before I even knew who the guy was, he was an idiot driving a pickup truck, and he had a bumper sticker that said, don't tell my mother I fly hot air balloons. She thinks I play piano in a whorehouse. For that.
That's some kind of bumper sticker, isn't it, Wallace?
It is. And I mean, I can remember that was, that must have been 1982 or 83. But I'm like, who the heck, I mean, who has a bumper? It was John Kugler.
Golly. Great stuff, man. Hey, before I let you go, this is a pretty busy summer. It's a special summer for your class, isn't it?
It is. The McCook class of 1985, we're having our 40th? It's our 40th reunion. It's going to be the last or second September, late September, the class of 85. We're having our reunion, and I mean, that's a big number, 40 years. I can't believe it was that long ago. I'm 58. Wow. I mean, it's just, time is undefeated, Rich. Time is undefeated.
Oh, no question about it. I take it, hopefully you and Eddie are planning on being here.
We're making plans. Let me tell you, it's looking pretty good at the moment. You know, we've got family issues like everybody does, older parents, things like that. But we are making best efforts to be there for sure.